Okay, Rabbi Say, so we're going to learn another piece from Eli Lapian on the Shvivei Lev, page Reish Samach Gimel. He quotes a famous piece from the Ramah, or it's not so famous, but it should be famous if it's not. The Ramah, we all are familiar with for his Haggais, his glosses on Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yosef Karo was the Mechaber, he was the one that wrote the actual Shulchan Aruch. He's the Beis Yosef, and he wrote he codified the Shulchan Aruch. And then the Ramah came along and added on top of his Shulchan Aruch what he called the Mappa. Mappa means a tablecloth. It sort of was supposed to accompany the table of the Ramah of the Mechaber. Mechaber was writing halachas for his kehila, for his Eidah, which is the Svardim, and instead of making two separate Shulchan Aruchs, the Ramah decided to add his Haggais onto Rabbi Yosef Karo's Shulchan Aruch. He called them the Mappa, the tablecloth, and Rav Huttner has a beautiful letter describing the incorporation, the amalgamation of the Mappa into the Shulchan Aruch. He writes it so beautifully. I wish I had the letter in front of me. But he basically says that originally it started out as a table and a mappa on top of the table. But eventually the mappa sort of became subsumed into the table so that Klal Yisrael became unified through this one sefer, which has the Svardish Minhagim and the Ashkenazish halachas all together, and that became the Shulchan, he says, that Klal Yisrael has eaten at for many, many centuries now, and in good times and in bad times, on Yontif, on Shabbos, we eat from this table, and Le'aleinu B'Shas, Avelos, and Saras, we eat at that table. This is the Shulchan Aruch that Klal Yisrael reaches for whenever they need to know what to do. And it's comprised of the Shulchan Aruch and the Mappa, which really became one sefer united. So the Ramesha Isserlish, which is the Rosh Tevis of the Ramah, so he wrote other svarim. He wrote the Darkei Meisha, which is more halachas, but then he wrote some Kabbalistic svarim, some mystical svarim. One of them is called the Torah Sa'il. I happen to have that sefer at home. If you ever want to borrow it, you could borrow it, but I don't think you're going to understand much of it. It's a very difficult sefer, not that I do, but I just bought it because I thought it was cool to have another sefer the Ramah, but I hardly ever use it because it's very, very difficult to understand. But in the sefer Torah Sa'ila, he brings a maisa, an amazing maisa, and he says like this, Shafaltein ha-philosoph ha-gadol. There was a great philosopher. His name was Afalton. I don't know if that's what?
Plato.
It is Plato?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So Plato was the great philosopher. Baal Yerushalayim, he was a Greek philosopher, right? Okay, so it's Inyana Diyayma with Hanukkah on its way. So he came to Yerushalayim in Nebuchadnezzar. With Nebuchadnezzar, I guess they were boys, I guess. I don't know, Nebuchadnezzar and Plato had a sheiches to each other? Is that documented?
I don't know. This is.
Okay, I don't know either. So,
Okay, good.
Ula'achar churban ha-mikdash nichnas la-harabayis. After the churban beis ha-mikdash, after Nebuchadnezzar went and destroyed the beis ha-mikdash, nichnas la-harabayis, he came to the harabayis, Plato, V'ras Yirmiyah Navi Beicha Ma'id U'meirim Kol Nehi V'kina Ala Churban. Plato lived in that time? That was the period of time of Plato? So early?
I don't know.
It makes sense. It looks like it, but okay, I just didn't know historically that's the tkufa that he lived in. Yirmiyah Navi lived a long time ago. I didn't know that Plato was so old. Anyway, but Yirmiyah Navi was crying, Umeirim Kol Nehi V'kina L'Churban, and he was lamenting and mourning and screaming and going crazy over the Churban. Vayishalaya Paltan Beishela. So Plato asks him two questions. Shalai Ata Hachacham Bisrael. You are the elder of Klal Yisrael. You are the wise Chacham of Klal Yisrael. Madua Ata Beichal Eitzim Bavonim. Why in the world are you crying over stones, over wood and stones? At the end of the day, it's a ruined palace, it's a ruined temple, and it's not nice to have anything destroyed, but at the end of the day, it's stone, it's marble, it's wood. What are you crying over stone and wood for? And number two, Harei Abayis Kfar Nechrav, this house is already destroyed. The Ein Roy L'Chacham Livkais Al Ha'Avar. Makes no sense for a Chacham to cry over something that's past. If you're, maybe a fool cries over something that happened in the past but even though it doesn't have, there's no real use, you're not accomplishing anything, but all right, you cry, you're an emotional person. But a Chacham, at least in Plato's world, should be cool, calm, and collected. You should always be able to, everything has to be rational, everything has to be logical. If you can't change it, and you can't go back in the past, so what are you crying for? You can't, if it's going to accomplish something, good. If not, not. So what's the eiftu of here? What's the accomplishment that you're doing? Those were the two questions that Plato asks. Again, number one, why are you crying over Eitzim and Avonim? At the end of the day, the structure is down. The structure was made of physical material, physical matter. And don't cry over that. And number two, what's the point of crying? It happened already. So why are you crying on something that's past? This is what Plato asks Yirmiyahu. Veshevlo Yirmiyahu ve'amarlei. Ata betur philosoph, yeshla vade kama sveikas philosophiais, asher adayin lo yadata pisrainam. I'm sure as a philosopher, there are many things that even you, the great Plato, do not know the answer to. I'm sure there are vexing philosophical questions, svekas that you might have that are unresolved. You've been, sitting like the, what's that artist, Rodin, the thinker? Like you're sitting like the thinker, like day and night, thinking, trying to, get to the bottom of what, of these very, very difficult, thorny, philosophical, theological questions. You must have many, many such svekas, correct? Amalei afalten badai kein hadavar. Yes, I actually do. I have many, many of these svekas that I cannot resolve, and it bothers me. V'yesh li harbei svekas asher chashveni shein afecha b'olam shifshet li yisam. And I'm the best, right? I don't even bother asking anybody because who's going to answer me? I'm the great Plato. If I can't figure these things out, then who is going to figure it out? Who am I going to go to? It's like sort of what the Taisus Yantif explains the Mishnah in Avos. The Mishnah in Avos says, it's in Kedushin, I think. Taiv Shabaraifim Legehenim. I believe it's the end of Kedushin. The best of doctors go to Gehenna. That's a very non-flattering thing for your pre-med guys, right? You might want to reconsider your major. I mean, after 10 years, I thought the 10 years of medical school was Gehenna, but then you find out that, that you have a lot more Gehenna awaiting you. It doesn't make sense. Doctors are nice people. The doctors I have are very fine, fine people. Why are you sending them off to Gehenna? What's the pshat on the mission? So Taisus Yantif says a beautiful pshat. He says that the mission doesn't say Raifim go to Gehenna. The mission says Taisha Raifim go to Gehenna. The best of the doctors, the doctors, I don't know, every doctor I ever go to has like a U.S. News and World Report top doctors, top New York doctors, New York Magazine or something. It turns out they have to pay for that. It took me many years to figure that out. But if you're a top doctor, not if you're a regular, run-of-the-mill doctor, you go to Olam Haba. But if you're the Spitz doctor, you're the number one cardiologist in the country. You're the number one radiologist. So you're going to Gehenna. Why? Because let's say you have a medical issue that comes before you and you don't really know what to do. You see it, you're looking at an x-ray up to the light, and it's like a weird thing going on inside of the person's heart. Or you're an oncologist, Leileno, and there's something, a weird growth you never saw before. So what's going to happen? If you're a regular doctor, so you seek counsel, you seek advice from other doctors, you send an email blast, I don't know, to all the people in your field, or put on your WhatsApp, so I'm sure there's a WhatsApp chat for the doctors in your field. And hey, did anyone ever experience such an x-ray? Anyone see this? Anyone know how to treat this? And I'm not embarrassed because I'm just a regular doctor like you are. But if, let's say, I'm the number one doctor, it doesn't pass for me to go to any other. Everyone knows I'm the number one doctor. If I ask you for advice and you're not the number one doctor, then what does that make me if you know it and I don't know it? So I'm not going to seek advice. I'm just going to operate in the dark, and then what's going to happen is I'm going to probably end up killing the patient. So Taiv Sheva Reifim LeMegehenim, the best of the doctor go to, because it doesn't, the gaiva kills him. The gaiva is going to be able to make him murder somebody because he doesn't want to ask anyone for advice. If you'd open it up to other people would probably, it's a big world out there, and there's probably somebody that could help out and know a little bit about it that you might not know. So that's sort of like what happens here to Plato. Plato is like the Plato. We still know who Plato is after all these millennia, right? For some reason. So he must have really been big. How many philosophers already do we know? There's Plato, Aristotle, and that's it, right? Were there any other philosophers?
Socrates.
Any others?
Okay. Some others throughout the centuries, maybe Renaissance or around there or something like that.
When did he live? When did Plato live? Do you know? What?
5 years ago?
5 years ago, maybe. Anyway, so that is what happened to Plato. Plato had all these shilas. He's not going to ask like some second-rate philosopher his fake, because it doesn't pass. It's not appropriate for him to ask. So he was stuck with all these philosophical quandaries. Okay. Amar lo Yirmiyahu. So Yirmiyahu says, Emar li oisam hasfekas fani efshet loch. Tell me all of your sfeikas. Give me the laundry list. Give me the whole list of sfeikas that you have, and I will answer every one of your questions. Vayayimer lai sfeikaisav. So Plato said, okay, fine. Go for it. Here's my sfeikas. V'yirmiyo pashulayas kulam klachiyad nizim. It wasn't even like a shaila. It wasn't even a... He didn't even have to spend time thinking about Yirmiyahu HaNavi. He just like, one after another. He was just batting it out of the park, one after another. Apaltan nidham ma'ed mizan. So Plato got very, he got rattled a little bit. He got startled by this. V'tama im aimed lefun of yulod isha shiyamoli b'chach marabba kol kach. He couldn't believe that there was a human being so full of wisdom. How is it possible? I thought I was so smart. I'm nothing compared to this man. I want you to know something, says Yirmiyahu. This brilliance that you hear from me, sha'avti me'etzim ba'avonim elu. You know where I got this wisdom from? It wasn't a natural, whiz. I wasn't born brilliant. The entire chachma that I have comes from these etzim ba'avonim on which we stand. The Beis HaMikdash is the source of Chachma. The Beis Hamikdash was the source of Torah. And from that Torah, I was able, from that Kedusha, from that Ruach, I was able to derive all of my Chachma. So that was basically the answer to the first question. Plato had two questions, if you remember. His first question was, what are you crying over Eitz and Avonim? Because he didn't understand what the Beis Hamikdash was. Maybe we don't understand what the Beis Hamikdash was. Yirmiyahu HaNavi says, the brilliance that I have is not from me. The brilliance that I have is from the Beis HaMikdash. They say over from Rabbi Kiva Eger, it might be in his Biurim on Mishnayos, I'm not sure. But, when we say in Pirkei Avos, we say, Yirotzeim Lefanecha, what does it say? Shibana Beis HaMikdash Hebe Menu. The same chalkein b'sayir asecha. we daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should build the Beis HaMikdash Meir B'Yameinu quickly, speedily in our days. We want the Beis HaMikdash. The same chalkeinu b'sayresecha, and give us our chelik in Tyro. What does chelik in Tyro? What does that have to do with the Beis HaMikdash? Why can't I learn in the Beis HaMikdash right now and get my chelik in Tyro? The answer is that through the Beis HaMikdash, and this is exactly what Yirmiyahu HaNavi was saying, through the Beis HaMikdash itself, we are able to be shayev chachma. Today we have a very, very small amount of chachma that we're able to understand the Torah. The Torah is very, very diminished. We have Torah Baruch Hashem, but with the Churban Beis HaMikdash, we also lost a lot of chachmas haTorah. The Maharal speaks about this at length, about how since Klal Yisrael and the Torah are one, so when Klal Yisrael were dispersed into Galus, the Torah also became exiled, and it's scattered. The wisdom of Torah is not one. It's not unified. It's not whole. It's scattered. It's fractured. And so we need the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is a source of Chachma. If we want our own personal Chelek in Torah, we have to daven the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt, because until it's rebuilt, we will never be able to fully realize our personal Chelek in Torah. V'yashe loscha shnia, and about your second question, heich noa l'chacham livkei salavar, it's not befitting a wise man to cry over spilled milk, something that happened. What are you crying over it for? He says, "Le'ucha lanes l'cha, I can't answer that question to you. Ki eincha misugal lahavin zeis, because you simply will not be able to understand my answer." Ad kansiva, this is brought in a very reliable source. If you're questioning the veracity of this story, don't question it, because if the Rama himself brings it, it's Tara Samus, it's Tara Misinai. The Rama is not bringing Bava Maisa. The Rama is bringing this story. I don't know exactly if it is Plato. We're relying on our friend that is Plato. I don't know if it's Plato or not, so don't get, the timeline might be off, but whatever philosopher this is, if it's not Plato, a different philosopher, if the Rama is bringing it, just like we have to have he has Nemanus on every single Hagan Shulchan Aruch, and we live Uvnei Yisrael Eilim Biad Rama, what's Lashon? Yaitzim Biad Rama. So the play on that Klal Yisrael says Bnei Yisrael Yaitzim Biad Rama, we go out Biad Rama with the Rama. Klal Yisrael goes out with every single day, we go out with the Rama. So Rama, this story is definitely emes if he's bringing it. Did you want to ask me something?
Well, yeah, I was gonna ask. I was confused. Rabbi said this story was Yirmiyahu HaNavi, right?
Yeah.
So Yirmiyahu HaNavi was first Beis HaMikdash. So I was confused because, I mean, I don't know for sure, but
Plato should be in the second by the Greeks.
Yeah, Yavanim. That's why I was confused.
I don't know. Yeah, that's why I'm also confused. I don't.
Yavanim.
Okay. We have to look this up. It should be with Google. We should be able to solve this in about 1.3 seconds. But okay. So anyway, that's the story. So listen to this. Haysafa v'haysaval zah saba mikelam zal. The great Saba Mikalmi is one of the three great Talmidim of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He was, of course, the founder of the Yeshiva in Kelim, the Talmud Torah of Kelim, the Musar Citadel. The Amar ki atshuva sheilas hashnia pshuta. He says he didn't explain this. He didn't speak this out to Plato because he didn't think Plato would have the cup to understand it. He says, but I know the answer. The Alter and Sava says, I know the answer. Because when we cry on the Beis HaMikdash, we're not crying over what happened. It's not over spilled milk. It's on the future. Because the gates of tears are never locked. So when we cry, we're crying to Hashem. We're using those tears to, to get through the gates. The way that we're going to be zeichet to the next Beis HaMikdash is only through crying, through the gates of tears that never lock. And so the tears of Yirmiyah HaNavi were not tears about the past, but they were tears, maybe it was about the Churban, but it was also, it had a futuristic purpose in that he was trying to plant the seeds, to wet the soil to plant the seeds for the next Beis HaMikdash to be built. But a guy can't understand this. This is something that a Jew could understand. A guy is not able to understand this. This is too esoteric. It's too mystical for a guy to understand. There's a gate of tears and it's not locked, and you're going to be able to cry and that will affect the future. That's something that a guy would not be able to understand. And the author says one more thing about this. What we could see from this is the greatness of the sanctity of a neshama, of a Jewish soul. Something that a hedgesh, a regular, simple person is able to understand. Meaning, everyone in this room, when I just said that, I didn't see anyone rolling their eyes. I didn't see anyone grunting. I didn't see anyone like scratching their head and saying, I don't understand what he's saying. We all can understand that. It's not such a... What the Alter Ben Slabodka is saying is not rocket science for us. It's not deep philosophy. It's pasha. We live with this. This is a regular Dvar Torah that we might say at the Shabbos table. That tears are not just for the past. Tears are going to be able to affect the future. And we're crying over not just what was, but what how things could be different. It's something that a regular yid understands. You don't have to be a philosopher to do this. And something that the great philosopher Plato was not able to be aimed on. Yirmiyahu didn't even like bother. Like, I don't want to waste my breath on you. Is something that a regular Jewish neshama has the capacity to understand. It's an amazing thing. It's amazing the power that a yid. And you know what? I'll extend what he says to anything. If you think this is like a little bit, I don't really understand this, Plato, philosophy, you know, Gayim, Jews, let me ask you a question, okay? What we're learning in yeshiva every day, whether you're learning Kiddushin, whether you're learning Bava Kama, whether you're learning Smicha stuff, whatever it is, and you have a Machlegis Rashi and Taisis, and then you have a Pnei Yeshua, and Pnei Yeshua resolves the Machlegis Rashi and Taisis, and there's a Marshal, and you know, there's a whole bunch of Mar Makaimis. For a regular yeshiva bacher, a regular good yeshiva bacher, whether it's in this yeshiva or another yeshiva, you can come to a shiur, you can do the Mar Makaimis on your own, and you'll be able to be aimed on everything that's going on. It might be a very esoteric type of sugya, something that's not at all, right? Whatever it is, it's a difficult sugya, but you know, you'll be able to get through it and to explain to your chavrusa, to explain to yourself, and to understand it. Now let me ask you a simple question. I don't mean to be in any way racist or, not racist, but like anti this, anti that. If you would take a regular guy in the street, pull him off the street, any guy that passed by the yeshiva building, it could be a Harvard graduate, doesn't matter. Pull him into the Beis Medrash and ask him and try to sit down with him and explain to him, obviously he doesn't know Aramaic, he doesn't know Hebrew, but just explain to him the concepts. How far would he be able to get into these concepts before he just like throws up his hands and walks out? A guy has no shaykhis to Tyra. Just doesn't. It's just not because, you know, we're so brilliant. It's just because there's something in our neshama that's holy, that has a kesher pnimi, an internal bond with the Tyra that enables us to be conversant in things that are very... They might be like beyond the scope of a human mind, but because we're Klal Yisrael, we have the ability, we have the gift to understand it. A guy doesn't have that. A guy doesn't have tyrus. He doesn't understand that. It's just a regular sugya. Sometimes, you know, if you tell it over to somebody, they have no idea what you're talking about. Even a Dvar Torah, you know, you take a Dvar Torah in the Parsha that you could sit around the Shabbos table and say, if there's a guy sitting in the room, not because he's not smart, he could be the smartest guy, he's not going to be able to understand it. He'll try, but he's not going to be able to. There's a certain thing about Torah that's holy and that's Kaddish that even simple people are able, simple Jews are able to understand it to a certain degree, and even the smartest guy will not be able to. It's just going to be like way over their head. Not going to understand it. This is the Yisayid that we take away from this Ramah. And it's very appropriate to learn. The reason why I chose this particular piece before Hanukkah is because it really is a very important message to us as B'nai Torah, as we go into Hanukkah. Because Hanukkah was a time in history that Jews were very enamored by philosophy. The philosophy that the Greeks were developing, and again, you know, I'm not a philosophy major at all, but there's something beautiful about Yafta Likim Liefes. There's something very beautiful and very tantalizing about the depth of philosophy, and it's something maybe that it's the closest perhaps that a guy could get to being having some kesher with a chachma that's above them, that's not Torah. And the Jews were also very enamored by it, and they wanted to. They became misyavdim. They became part of the Greeks. They wanted to attach themselves onto this Greek chachma. And what we're celebrating on Hanukkah is the fact that not just we were miraculously able to beat back the forces of the Greek and their culture and their philosophy and their mission, but the triumph of Torah, the triumph of Torah Shebaal Peh specifically, and the way that our Torah Shebaal Peh is so much greater, so much richer, so much deeper, so much holier than any chachma that the Yevanim, and I extend the Yevanim to any of the many branches of wisdom that exist in the world, whether it's math or whether it's science or whether it's music or any of the chachmas, which are, they're not foreign to Torah. Torah sort of contains all of these chachmas within them. But to the degree that we become in love with these types of chachmas that are chachmas chitzanias, they're not naturally part of the Torah, they're separate. So we see from this story that there's no kesher in the world, that the chachma of Torah, if we would work on just understanding a single taisis, it would be greater than all of the chachma that could ever come out of philosophy. 100 Platos could not match up to one line in Rashi. It's just not, it's Shemayim Varetz. It doesn't, you see, that as much as Plato is still known, the fact that his name is even known by us in the world, in our world today, means that he must have been a great Chacham, because there must have been 10,000 Chachamim like him, or sort of like him, but we don't know their names. But Plato was obviously somebody very great, and look at the story. The story says that he didn't understand, he didn't have a Shaychas, he wasn't able to be masig what Yirmiyahu was crying over. He didn't understand what the Beis HaMikdash was. He didn't understand why you're crying over something that happened in the past. And every Bar Bei Rav is able to understand the Torah that the Alter von Kalam gave, because Torah is infinite, it's holy, it's nitzchi. And all the other things in the world, unless it's used as part of Torah, if you're learning a sugya in Shas that involves pi, that now pi becomes something very holy. But if it's just tam chachma for the sake of chachma, it's great to be able to know it, to do well in your finals, to get a good GPA and to get a good parnasa, that's fine. But in terms of thinking that there's something to it and that it's able to somehow be equal to chachma satira, even though it's the same mark on the, you know, same grade as a Talmud grade and philosophy might be, you know, one under the other on your report card, but it's Shemayim Varetz. The brilliance of Torah, the holiness of Torah, the nitzchis of Torah is something that you can't even begin to compare. You can't put it put them in the same universe in terms of comparing one to the other. And it's important for us, I think, to understand that, to appreciate what we have, the gift of Torah, the Sein Chalkeinu B'Sarei Secha, our Chelek in Torah. We each have a very, very important mission in our life, and that's to unearth, to dig up our own personal Chelek in Torah. You'd be surprised. You think that, I don't have a Chelek in Torah. You know, I have a Chelek in Torah. What Chelek in Torah? Let's say I would tell each and every one of you that you have 10 svarim that you're really destined to write by the end of your life. Would you believe me? Would you believe me? Would you think it's true or you think I'm lying? The Netziv, there was a story, famous story about the Netziv. The Netziv, not going to get into it, but the Netziv was, he wasn't such a great student when he was young, and his parents were already wanting him to be a carpenter, and he overheard a conversation between his parents that, like, he's getting in trouble in yeshiva. It's not for him. Obviously, we have to let him be a good balabas, better than wasting his day in yeshiva. Anyway, he decided then to have a change of heart. He's going to start learning. The great Netziv, we don't have many gedalim on the level of the Netziv. And he became the Netziv, and he wrote a sefer called Hamik Shaila. He wrote a lot of svarim. One of them is on the Shultis. And he made a suda when he published it, and he said that this isn't just a suda because I'm finishing a sefer. This is a suda because it's a haidah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because I would have died, and after 120 years, I would have come up to Shamayim, and they would have said, you know, where's your Hamik Shaila? Where's your Seah? Hamik what? My harmonica? What's Hamik Shaila? What do you want from me? No. Your book, your saver, a book. My catalog of Stenders. Here's my catalog of Stenders. Yeah, I was a carpenter. No. You were destined to write a sefer on the Shultis. Me, I was supposed to write a sefer on the Shultis. Come on, you're not talking to me, right? No. We're talking to you. And he says, so now I'll be able to go up to Shamayim because I actually did it. I wrote a sefer in the Shultis. He found his chelek in Torah, and he wrote on Chumash, and he wrote on Shas, and he wrote. We all have a chelek in Torah. We all have our own chelek in Torah. We do. That's the truth. We have our own svarim to write. We have our own chidushim. It's a lifetime process. First, you have to learn, and you have to chazer, and you have to learn some more, and you have to get a lot of ideas into it, and then you have to think, and you have to spend time, and you have to have amelos. But if you want, you could write svarim beyond your wildest expectations, beyond your wildest dreams, because you have a chelek in Torah. There's no, just the guys with the long white beards, they're not the only ones that have a chelek. We all have chelek in Torah. It's just a matter of internalizing what we learn and building ourselves, and that's something that we have to think about. As we go into Hanukkah, I want to be the greatest version of myself. I have a neshama that's, it's infinite. I have holiness is infinite. I have a Torah that's infinite. And let me try to embrace the Torah and understand it and learn it and love it and live with it and develop my own chidushim eventually, mitzvah Hashem. This is something that I think is an important yesod as we go into the days of Hanukkah.